Are you tired of the 9-to-5 lifestyle? Do you want more freedom to do what you want, when you want it, without sacrificing your current income? Then this is the show for you. Every week, we dive into John's journey towards financial freedom and everything he has learned since 2014. Real estate investing, cryptocurrency, stocks, private lending, foreign residency, tax saving strategies, infinite banking, assets protection, and much more. Now, here is your host, the founder of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus, John Rickgarn.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when you're listening to this. This is John Rickgarn, your host, as always, of the Wealth and Freedom Nexus podcast. If you've been joining us from the beginning, I have talked a few times about self-directing IRA accounts, your 401ks, your Roth IRAs, one of my favorites, and traditional IRAs. And there are many custodians out there that allow you to self-direct your funds. And one that I myself personally use, I've had a great time with or had good luck with, is Quest IRA. And today we have a great guest, Derek Long from Quest, who's going to be talking about the self-directed IRA, what Quest is able to do and accomplish for their customers, and you know why self-direction might be a good play for you. Now, Derek comes very interesting background. I did not know this until about 30 seconds ago. He used to work for the FBI translating Russian documents. And apparently that was, I don't know, maybe wasn't exciting enough. So then decided, well, what the hell? Now I'll work with self-directed IRAs. So I'm anxious to see how that shift came about. So Derek, welcome to the show and thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, John. You know, I'm excited to be here. It doesn't sound as exciting as that is. And it always gets over exaggerated. I was translating receipts. Oh, they had bread. They had some coffee. Very boring.
So sure. What is President Putin's favorite coffee or coffee of choice?
Yeah, right.
documents you looked at.
It was very boring, to be honest.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, here I thought I'd have something more interesting to share. But
Nope. Nothing exciting. I had a laminate.
Sounds good. Well, Derek, maybe you could just start back, stepping back from the Russian receipt translations. Maybe just a little bit about your background, how you started with Quest, and what kind of made you also become a customer of Quest, where you're self-directing your retirement account as well.
Yeah, well, what's kind of funny is people don't realize this, but my dad actually is one of the owners of Quest.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And he wanted me to come on board all the way back in 2006.
Okay.
But I was smarter than he was, let me tell you. You're always smarter when you're a parent than your parents when you're a
teenager. Yeah, exactly. Isn't that how it always works? So,
right. But it's funny to say, I actually tried to start my own restaurant, failed miserably, after that, to get out of debt, I joined the army because the army I knew would pay for college, gave me a good job and stuff. So I was in the army, got out of the army, went to college. And that's where I just started trying to look for other jobs.
Okay.
And I realized I really like investing. I like real estate. I like, doing notes and fix and flips and rentals, which I currently own several rentals. I own more notes than anything.
Okay.
But I wanted a job where I could participate in investments and learn about them without taking a lot of the risk. And this fell right into that. And I was like, Dad, would you consider hiring me? Here's my resume. Here's my degree.
Remember that offer you handed me all those years ago?
Yeah, 10 years went by. And then I was like, okay, maybe he knew what he was talking about.
Right, exactly. So interesting. So now with Quest and now myself personally, I've only been a customer of Quest just this year. So I'm not a longtime customer. I'm, one of the newbies, so to speak. Learned about Quest through some various networking events. But maybe just a high level, what all could Quest help others with? Is it just retirement accounts or are there some other options that Quest can help self-direct people?
I always tell people it's our job is to teach people how to use the retirement account and invest it in what I'm going to label as alternative assets. For okay. most people listening to this podcast, it's probably going to be real estate related, rentals, fix and flips, notes, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but that's the most common thing that we see here because we are okay. real estate experts.
Okay.
So that's my job. Now, understand, as I say this, I'm sure you've probably worked and heard of other self-directed IRA companies. There's almost no bad companies out there.
Sure.
I can confidently say that because the bad ones don't last. Mm-hmm. The bad ones, you see, they've been around for a year or two, and you give them another 6 months, they'll be out. They're right. gone. You know, they're temporarily there. But there's some good companies out there. We've been around for decades now. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we deal in. All we do is teach people how to properly invest the retirement account into alternative assets.
Sure.
Not invest in stocks, annuities, mutual funds, bonds, CDs. So that's our main focus here.
Okay. Which are obviously the mainstream investments. I personally think the alternative investments should just be called investments, but Wall yep. Street has different ideas on that. So
absolutely.
Aside. And now one thing, obviously we're talking about with Quest and their, you know, in the whole sphere of retirement accounts, you kind of have the employer sponsored ones, your 401ks, 457s, 453bs, I think if I remember correctly, whatever alphanumeric soup the IRS tax code comes up with. And those all have their, you know, places. But, you know, if you're not an employee, maybe you're self-employed, or maybe you just don't have income that's, you know, where you have a W-2 per se, then one can have the individual retirement account or the IRA. Correct. Now, I think it gets a little convoluted because a lot of people just say IRA, but there is the traditional side. And then since 1997, there's been the Roth IRA. Yes. Would you be able to just give kind of a very high level of what those two are? And maybe is one better than the other?
You know, it's funny. A lot of people think that one is better than the other, and I can make an argument for both. Okay. Why one's better than over it. So I think it really depends on your position.
Okay.
Right. But a retirement account generally is a tax deferred account. Mm. Now, notice I'm saying retirement account because this could be your 401k. This could be your SEP IRA, a traditional IRA, a regular IRA, a rollover IRA. Mm-hmm. Right. It could be that 403b, that 457. These are all things that we call tax deferred.
Sure.
The IRS will let us do investments in them. All the earnings come back today and are not taxed.
Okay.
This is pretty nice. If you think of doing a fix and flip and making 20 grand and you don't owe any taxes, no capital gains, mm-hmm. like that's pretty awesome.
Right.
Right. I could do the same thing. I could buy a stock, blow up in value. I could buy some cryptocurrency. Doesn't matter what it is. Right. All the earnings are tax deferred. Mm-hmm. I get to defer it. And the IRS says we allow you to defer those taxes until the age of 72.
Okay.
Now at 72, the IRS says, hey, man, you're getting old. You're going to kick the bucket soon.
Yep.
You're going to owe us some taxation. So they force you to pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to always give the example of 100 grand and a million. So if I have $100,000 in my traditional IRA, remember, I get to defer taxes. So I get to grow it mm-hmm. to 72. And let's say at 72, I have $1 million.
Sure.
Well, when I have to pull that out, let's keep it in a very modest bracket. We'll call it 20%.
Okay.
You owe 200 grand in taxes. This mm-hmm. is very common, right? It's very normal. It's not bad. You still have $800,000 of your money sitting right here in this example, and I love it. And we got to defer the taxation.
Sure.
Now, because we got to defer it along the entire way, we took multiple tax deductions.
Mm-hmm.
This is something a lot of people forget. Every time I contribute to one of those tax deferred accounts, I'm taking a tax deduction today.
Right.
And it meets my needs today, and I like this. Now, the reverse of that, you actually mentioned in 1997, a senator came along, Senator Roth.
Yep.
And he created the Roth IRA. And this is the one of those accounts then that is almost the reverse of that. Same example. I could take my $100,000 today. And what the Roth allows us to do is take it out of that tax deferred account. Mm-hmm. And we move it to what we're going to call a post tax account, right? Or after tax.
Sure.
Some people call it tax free, right? Because of how it grows.
Right.
Right. But now if I have to pay all my taxes on 100 grand, we're going to way overestimate your tax bracket. We're going to call it 40%.
Mm-hmm.
You owe $40,000 in taxes.
Right.
This means now that my 100 grand, we can grow it to a million. I'm never forced to pull it out. And it really does grow tax free. Mm-hmm. Now, if we listen to the story, option one, I owe 200,000 in taxes. Option two, I owe 40.
Right.
So at first you think option two makes way more sense. But the problem to the story is option one, I got to defer it.
Yep.
You know, and most of us like to defer paying bills mm-hmm. as long as we can. Where option two, I have a $40,000 bill I just gave you today. So I always tell people, which one's better for you?
Sure.
If I'm someone that can afford to do this Roth conversion, most of the time it's going to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a younger individual, I've never had a retirement account, the Roth typically makes sense.
Right.
But if I'm leaving that job I've worked at for 20 years and rolling over that 401k, there's $250,000 in it. Very mm-hmm. commonly we see this. You probably can't afford to do a Roth conversion.
Sure.
So that doesn't mean you don't keep contributing and take your tax deductions and grow it. You know, and I always tell people, I can help you out. We can look at your situation on an individual level, which is usually what someone wants.
Sure.
Everyone out here that's listened to your podcast, John, they're in a different position,
mm-hmm.
right? Yep. They're different ages. They have different investment strategies. They're going to have different earnings. They're going to mm-hmm. something along those lines. That's why we have to look at it on an individual level. This is why there's not one that's better than the other.
Sure. Well, and I think we all just, you know, have different maybe viewpoints or philosophies too. Now, myself personally, I look at the tax rates today. You know, we had the Trump tax cuts that were enacted in late 2017. I believe it's January 2026. A lot of those tax brackets, barring another change from Congress, they're going to revert back. Yeah. So I look at long term that, well, tax rates are essentially on sale. I like taking advantage of sales. So for me, in my situation, and my accountant can verify our yeah. tax situation is very confusing, but with our rental properties, our depreciation and everything we have, I am able to offset a lot of earned income in the form of Roth conversions. So, yeah. you know, converting little by little every year, a bit from my traditional retirement accounts or tax deferred, like you said, to mm-hmm. the tax-free post-tax, whatever euphemism Absolutely. You want, but the Roth accounts. I can't see tax rates being any lower. I could be wrong, yeah, but that's just my personal opinion. And I look at it, it's like, well, history shows us, you know, marginal tax rates have been as high as 92%. So I'd rather pay the tax hit now at 20, 22, 24% and, you know, not leave that to chance versus, well, I'll defer it. Maybe it'll be lower. Oh, crap. I owe 67% in taxes when I'm 62 and a half or whatever the age is. So I just like the certainty. But like you said, everyone's different. Everyone's situation's different. And yeah, I think that individual touch definitely makes sense for, hey, what works best for you and what works best for your situation. Yeah. And now, I touched base with this on a previous podcast. The benefit of now on the 401k side is you have higher contribution limits.
Sure.
The downside of an IRA, whether it's a Roth or traditional, is that still set at 6,000 or is that set to go up for 2022?
Nope. Yeah. So it's still set at 6,000 or 7,000 if you're over 50 on the IRA side.
Sure.
The 401k side, you can contribute so much more. The max between a combined contributions up to $58,000.
Wow.
So that's pretty impressive. So if you're trying to find a way to shovel in money, these are one of the best accounts to do it in, mm-hmm. but you do have to qualify for one. So we always go over a lot right. of qualifications and stuff. Make sure you do before you just set one up because they can be very tricky.
Exactly. Okay. So yeah, I keep hoping they bump up the threshold for IRA contributions, and
I wish
I personally
they
don't know why they have such a low limit, but I'm not in Congress, so I can't answer that. So now if anyone's listening to this and maybe they're like me, have a quote unquote self-directed account with Fidelity, but in that account, I can only do stocks, bonds, mutual funds, maybe an ETF. And say someone's listening to this and like, well, this self-direction, you know, sounds kind of interesting and I'm interested in opening one. How easy or what is the process for if someone were to call you up, hey, Derek, I have this IRA at Vanguard. I'd like to move it over to Quest. What would the process be like?
So it's pretty simple. Honestly, guys, typically I charge you $100.
Okay.
All right. This is because your IRA with us becomes its own entity. It has its own name, its own address, its own signature, even its own level of asset protection, which we can talk about a little bit.
Sure.
You know, but so understand your IRA through us will become its own entity. But okay. outside of that, guys, it's very basic. Name, social date of birth, who inherits the account when you pass away, and a signature. It takes, honestly, on average, about 5 minutes
okay.
to fill out the application. Now, once we have your account established, it is going to take usually a couple of days to transfer the cash from your other custodian over to us.
Sure.
So, but ultimately setting up the account's really simple. It's your basic information and I get to charge you $100.
Gotcha. So, okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
And then you had mentioned with the transfer, and I know the IRS can get a little finicky about this. Is it typically recommended that, you know, say your IRA is held at Fidelity, that Fidelity sends a check directly to Quest? If they write a check to the individual and the individual sends it off, it could trigger a taxable event. So, is that true?
Every time I hear this, right, it's this comes down to what type of current retirement account you have.
Okay.
And verbiage is key. To the average person, hypothetically, if I had a rollover IRA at Fidelity and I said, hey, I want to move my IRA there to my IRA at Quest.
Okay.
And that's all I said. That is different than saying I want to transfer my IRA there to transferring to my IRA at Quest.
Okay.
I want to roll over my IRA there to enroll it over to my IRA at Quest. Each one of these processes is completely different.
Okay.
Now, if we notice, it sounds almost like we said the same thing.
Yep. And I think many do use them interchangeably. They're transfer, rollover, same thing.
Yeah. And what this really comes down to is you have a guy that when you call up there, they're at Vanguard and they have a book and they go, oh, they assume you know what you're talking about. Oh, well, he said rollover. So they turn to the rollover bank. You know, and then they read it and they go through those steps. This is really what happens.
Okay.
So the best thing to do is first off, ask your IRA specialist here at Quest. Hey, here's what I do. What steps do I take? And we'll physically give you the proper verbiage. We'll even stay on the phone with you if you like.
Oh, okay.
To make sure the things go the right way.
Gotcha.
Right. Now, some of those, like you mentioned, are though we have to go through it and it gets reported to the IRS, but it will not create taxation.
Okay.
Other ways we can actually transfer the IRAs between each other and there is zero reporting and no one even knows that you moved it.
Oh,
so we always try to go for that method if we can. Sometimes we can't. And the best thing to do is just ask us. We'll look at your type of account and we'll let you know.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So transfer is not the same as rollover. Good to know.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing is most people don't know that. And it's all because the person you're talking to on the phone, they're just not an expert. You know, they don't sit here and read tax code like I do.
Yep.
My job's boring.
Mm-hmm. So now, and you kind of brought up an earlier interesting question before. So on a previous podcast, I had mentioned with a self-directed retirement account is the, you know, you have a wide range of options. You can invest in raw land, a teak plantation, note lending. These are all things that I have in my retirement accounts. But typically, there are a few items that the IRS says you can't invest in.
Correct.
And one of them is arts and collectibles. So if you're, I don't know, you have an endless pocketbook and you're able to buy the Mona Lisa, you can't have that in your IRA. And when I first heard that, I was just kind of was curious, like, okay, why in the world, you know, I can, you know, do a fix and flip of a real estate. I can get startup shares in a business. I could buy cryptocurrency in my IRA. What in the world is with this, you know, artwork? Did someone, you know, fail art class and then they passed a law in Congress that you can own artwork in an IRA? And it was interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I did a little bit of research that it stemmed from a case that someone did own artwork in their IRA. But unfortunately, when they, you know, traced it back, okay, Bill bought it from Sam, who bought it from Teresa, et cetera, they traced it back that the artwork was initially stolen by the Nazis in Europe. And they had, you know, looked into it, tracked down the family, and the family said, hey, this is rightfully our, you know, painting. We would like it back. Well, since it was held in an IRA, it kind of created a quandary that the IRA is essentially a trust and does have asset protection built in it. So it was kind of like stuck between a rock and a hard place. It's like, well, yeah, you might have legal, you know, say to it. That might be part of the family, you know, heirlooms, but well, this trust does protect that artwork. You're not able to sue them or take that out. And because of that, and of course, Congress just likes to make things simple. They just said, okay, no artwork, no collectibles, no nothing in an IRA. But on that, could you maybe talk to a little bit about, you know, how protected are the assets in an IRA versus, you know, your traditional brokerage account or, you know, another account that someone might have?
We'll be right back. Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host, Matt Heslin, brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Sure. So if you guys ever really want to look into it, I tell people don't read articles, right? When you read an article on these type of topics and things, it will get confusing. And this is because when we read IRS tax code, a lot of it is up for interpretation.
Exactly. So
the first thing you want to do is you want to check out IRS section 408. This talks all about just the IRA.
Okay.
What is the IRA? How does the IRS view it? Why, where, what to invest in, all this stuff. And it's just about the IRA.
Okay.
Right. Now in there, the very first line in there, it says that the IRS considers an individual retirement account to be labeled as a trust. Now, the following, as you read through it, it is considered a tax exempt trust. This is a real entity. Right. It has, and like I was saying earlier, its own name, its own address, its own signature, can have its own tax ID number. Well, this means that if I'm going to go ahead and buy an asset, there are assets like you labeled it, they no longer will let us purchase, artwork being one of them, you know, collectible. Right. But most of us aren't trying to do that. You know, we're not trying to buy the Mona Lisa. We're not trying to buy alcohol. Right. But knowing this, then what can I buy is just about anything else.
Okay.
So first off, you want to consider what your investment is. If I'm doing notes, if I'm doing something very passive, very rarely do I need very high levels of asset protection.
Okay.
Right? Right. Because I'm not dealing in day-to-day operations. I'm not dealing with the tenants. I'm not dealing with contractors and toilets. I'm just a lender. I'm a passive investor. I'm not doing anything. But let's say I wanted to use my same IRA and I'm going to buy a house and I'm going to rent it out.
Okay.
Right. Well, in these cases, you have a little bit more at risk. Now, remember, if the IRA is already its own entity, with its own name and own everything else, I have so many clients, before they ever purchase another property, they set up a new IRA with me for every single house.
Oh, wow.
Right? And this is literally because they know, like, if something happens, the tenants will only go after what's inside that specific IRA.
Right.
You know, and this is why they like to go through these type of motions. Now, do you need to do that? That's up to you. Like I said, we don't see it done as often on the passive side, but when we're dealing with more active investments, I can understand and see why it makes sense.
Now, well, it just kind of goes to, you know, ask a lawyer. Well, probably you shouldn't ask a lawyer. Should I have another LLC? Because they'll be happy to charge you to set up the paperwork. And I know some investors that have 10 properties and they have 10 LLCs. I know some that have, you know, 100 properties, but they're all under one LLC and everything in between. You know, again, just back to individual risk tolerance and, you know, what's the equity? And, you know, back to the rental property. Well, you know, maybe if it's a, I don't know, a class A senior living community in Central Florida might have a little bit less risk than a Class D Section 8 downtrodden apartment building in the ghetto that the police won't even monitor. And, you know, you could argue that one's going to have more risk than the other. So I could kind of see having one IRA versus 10 IRAs or whatever the case may be. So
absolutely.
With the IRA, and there was a webinar that I was on that Quest had. And for any of you listening, you can go to Quest IRA's website. I'll have a link in the show notes. They are very good at educating and having guest speakers on everything from, you know, fix and flips in your IRA to private lending in your IRA to, you know, everything in between. And there was an individual from Quest, and I apologize, I don't know his, I can't remember his name, but he had said that there's actually more protections in an IRA versus than say a 401k or an employer sponsored plan. And other lawyers have said, well, the 401k has more asset protection because of the ERISA rules where IRAs don't apply. You know, back to the question, is one better than the other for asset protection, or is it back to the individual case or individual person's needs?
So it's going to depend on multiple things in there. All right. It's going to depend on, first off, we got to look at the asset. What is the asset that's in question?
Okay.
All right. If we're dealing with individual property, single individual homes and stuff like that, an IRA and a 401k, I can make an argument, are almost the same.
Okay.
Okay. But let's take it a step further, right? Let's talk about things like the death tax, probate taxes, right? This is where an IRA and a 401k will far succeed any type of LLC that you could create.
Okay.
All right. IRAs can be 100% exempt in death taxes, no matter what the dollar figure is. It could be 100% exempt in certain probate issues. Like, this is nice to know, because that is not how an LLC works or a trust works.
Exactly.
Right. So in these type of scenarios, this is really nice to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where the 401k has an advantage over the IRA is when it comes to a prohibited transaction.
Okay.
Now, a prohibited transaction is when a fiduciary or an IRA owner or someone who potentially would inherit the IRA provides additional services, usually to the IRA.
Okay.
This could be extending its my credit for my IRA to get a deal, adding extra cash under the table, owning a construction company and have my IRA hire my construction company, my 401k.
Gotcha.
Well, on the IRA side, the IRA, the IRS says, well, the IRA ceases to exist. They blow it up, the entire account. On the 401k side, though, they say, hey, you did something prohibited. We only blow up your transaction.
Oh,
not the other 10 transactions that you've done.
Okay.
Okay. So that's where the 401k might have a leg up on the IRA side. But on the IRA side, an IRA is always held at a custodian, Fidelity, Charles Schwab, Quest. A 401k is held by the consumer. So if it was your 401k, John, you hold your 401k.
Sure.
Do you think the IRS is more likely to look at the custodian that has 21,000 clients, right? Or are they more likely to look at the individual that doesn't have to report to anybody?
Sure. Yep.
Right. And these are why a lot of people, they don't realize 401ks are very highly scrutinized by the IRS and typically very highly audited.
Okay.
So of course they give you extra protection from a prohibited transaction because they look at them a lot more closely than they do the IRA.
Okay. And now with you just mentioned with the highly audited, and I'm trying to remember, I believe it is a form 5500.
Yep.
Now, as I recall, if it's a, you know, back to the 401k side, once the assets in a 401k reach $250,000 or higher, then you have to report, I think it's a 5500. Is that correct? Where it says,
yeah, so it's, hey, a 5500 easy or a 5500, right? One, but when you're under 250,000, then when you go over, you go to the easy form.
So, gotcha. Yes. Okay. And then with the, on the IRA side, whether you have 20,000, 250,000, or you're Peter Thiel with a $5 billion account, there's no 5500 filing. Is that correct?
We'll be right back.
Insights into Teens, a podcast series exploring the issues and challenges of today's youth. Talking to real teens about real teen problems. Explore issues from braces to puberty, social anxiety to financial responsibility. Each week, we talk about the topics concerning today's youth. We look at how the issues affect teens, how to cope with these issues, and how parents, friends, and loved ones can help teens handle these challenges. Check out our video episodes on youtube.com/insightsintothings. Catch our audio versions on podcast.insightsintoteens.com or on the web at insightsintothings.com.
That's correct. So what happens is your custodian actually has to file a 5498 each year.
5498, okay.
Right? But your custodian does this.
Gotcha.
Right? Now, how often do you do a 5500 form? Well, I do it once a year for my one 401k.
Yep.
Notice Quest, like I said, we had 20,000 clients, so we have to do it 20,000 times in a single year.
Right.
So which one do you think is going to look cleaner, neater, and better?
Well, probably the one with a little bit more experience on it, yes.
So what happens is this is where people seem to get in trouble with the 401ks.
Okay.
Right? Man, they are powerful. If you listen to the very beginning of this podcast, those 401ks, you can shovel in a whole bunch of money. You have checkbook control. You write your own checks. You can avoid cool taxes like UDFI in certain situations. Yeah. You know, but you better know what you're doing. I tell people before you set one up, That's not the time to be cheap with the CPA or the tax attorney.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. You, what's the old adage Warren Buffett say? Value, price is what you pay. Value is what you get, I believe.
There you go.
Perfect. All right. And now with it, you know, everyone's situation is different. Now I'm assuming if you, you know, someone does call in and, you know, maybe they do have a side hustle, maybe they're self-employed. I'm, you know, guessing you or any of the advisors at Quest could walk the individual through and say, you know, based on your situation, I think a 401k would be better or an IRA Absolutely. Would be better. Good.
Okay. Absolutely. So we offer both of these plans, right? We can walk people through how to set them up both, and we can get them both set up in 24 hours.
Okay.
They're both good plans. They really are.
Yeah.
I like what you label it because everyone's different, man. Some people will be more comfortable with one over the other. There's not one that's better than the other. When people think that, it's based off their own personal situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like the, you know, old, what's better, a Ford or a Chevy? And someone's going to say a Ford is better. Someone's going to say a Chevy. Well, it's based on their personal preferences, their experiences, everything else in between. So, yeah. I mean, I see pros and cons with both of them. You know, you had mentioned like the unrelated debt finance where long story short, and for whatever reason, the IRS says, if you buy a house with your IRA, say you put 20% down and get an 80% non-recourse loan. Oh, you did that in an IRA. That's prohibited. We're blowing up the IRA. For whatever reason, you can set that up in a 401k, get a non-recourse loan, use leverage, grow your account more through that leverage, even though it's the same property, the same cash flow, the same tax treatment. The IRS gives their blessing that, oh, in a 401k, it's fine, but in an IRA, it's not. Again, I don't make the rules, but that's just how it is.
On the IRA side, you actually can take that same loan. Okay. Right. But it brings on something called UDFI tax.
UDFI.
Right? You mentioned, right? The unrelated debt finance income tax. But people get scared of this. I like to say it's actually a good thing.
Okay.
I just have to present it a different way. So I teach a whole class in this area, but I like to first start off with you as an individual. If I own a house and I buy a house and I fix it up, I flip it, I sell it, I make 50 grand in profit.
Okay.
I don't get to keep all that profit, right? As an individual. As an individual, I have to pay taxes.
Sure.
Right? So if I have to pay taxes on this money, what do I do to offset it? I take claim depreciation or HOA fees, expenses, rehab costs, right? And then at the end of the day, I might only owe taxes on 10 grand. That's not what I owe. That's what I pay taxes on.
Sure.
In an IRA could do that exact same thing. And let's say the IRA bought the house out 100%, right? No loan.
Okay.
Well, the 50 grand... you don't get to claim any depreciation. You don't get to claim those HOA fees or those expenses, but why? You didn't pay any tax.
Sure.
Right? So it's a moot point. If you're not paying taxes on your income, then you
get a tax deduction. Those things.
Now, if the IRA takes a loan, says same house, it's 100 grand. I'm going to put $30,000 down. I'm going to borrow 70 from the bank.
Okay.
The IRS will actually now allow this.
Right? Okay.
So the IRS will allow the IRA to debt leverage itself and take a loan from a bank to purchase a property.
Okay.
But it has to now pay taxes on the income it makes to the percentage of debt leverage. All right.
Interesting.
So that 50 grand now, remember originally in the IRA wasn't taxable, but now it is.
Okay.
Well, if the IRA has to pay taxes, guess what it gets to do? It gets the claim depreciation.
Okay.
It gets the claim those HOA fees. It gets the claim those rehab costs.
Okay. Interesting. And
it originally wasn't allowed to do this.
Okay.
So what's really unique about it is some people are like, oh, well, all I heard is I had to pay a tax.
Sure.
And if you did the deal personally, you have to pay tax.
Right.
You know, like so what's nice though is at least in the IRA side, you get to claim all those things.
Okay.
Now this whole last 5 minutes we've been talking about this, just throw it out the window if you have a 401k. A 401k is going to be exempt. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Sounds good. And now one last question I had for you, Derek, and this just kind of got brought up right before we hit record. You had mentioned that there was a tax court case that was decided, I think you said just today or yesterday, that going forward could impact retirement accounts for individuals. Could you speak maybe just of a quick high level of what that court case was and how that would apply? Or
Absolutely. If you guys want to look up the court case, it's called McNulty versus Commissioner. All right. And prior to this, one of the few checkbook control cases we've had was Swanson versus Commissioner.
Okay.
And if you ever like the term or hear the term checkbook control, you'll hear it a lot in our industry. It's mm-hmm. the way the IRA establishes an LLC. The LLC has a checkbook.
Sure.
Long story short, you know, well, Swanson versus Commissioner took place in the late 90s.
Okay.
That's 30 years ago. That's literally 30 years ago.
Yeah. Should only be 10 or 20 years ago, but yeah.
But like, that's creepy to think about, isn't it? This is like,
exactly.
Anyways, so this new case pretty much brought to light was a client established an LLC through their IRA. They were labeled as the manager and they purchased gold.
Okay.
All right. And they stored the gold inside their house.
Okay.
And the IRS ruled that this was a prohibited transaction, not because they purchased gold.
Okay.
But because they were the manager of the LLC and they had access to the gold personally.
Okay.
Because they were able to take constructive receipt, there was no way to prove that they were doing the appropriate thing.
Okay.
And the IRS ruled it prohibited. Now, what's really sucks for the McNultys is that they purchased this gold 20 plus years ago.
Oof.
So the IRS is distributing their retirement account today,
mm-hmm.
20 plus years ago, penalizing and taxing them on all of that money.
Oh, wow. So likewise, really if they had held the gold, say, at, I don't know, silver bullion or at a, you know, trust account or a vault that they didn't have constructive receipt of, then the IRS probably wouldn't have had an issue with it.
Yeah, well, so there's two sides of it. That would definitely fix part of the problem.
Okay.
All right. That fixes 50% of the problem is if you're storing some sort of precious metal, don't store it at your house.
Gotcha.
Right?
Do it at your friend's house. Then you should be fine.
The second part of it, though, was that they literally talked about how the McNultys were labeled as their own manager.
Okay.
Now, this has brought up a lot of things because if they were labeled their own manager, I'm in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Our constructive receipt is actually not the property, but it's that bank account. Could I write my own checks then for this asset?
Mm-hmm.
And some custodians allow for this. Now, Quest doesn't. We always say that to fix this problem, you need what we call a non-disqualified person to be labeled as your manager. Someone that's not you, not your spouse.
Okay.
Right. Now, if we have someone else in there as the manager, this looks cleaner.
Okay.
And notice if they did that, the IRS probably would not have looked at the case at all.
Oh, okay.
So now we have a true court case where the IRS has stepped in and said, hey, look, they're labeled as their own manager and we're going after all the retirement accounts. And what's really sad is a lot of other custodians, not the good ones.
Sure.
You'll notice the very few custodians allow you to be your own manager, but some of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ones that do allow you to be your own manager, allow your spouse to be your manager, be very careful because now the IRS is coming.
Sure.
The IRS sees it, you know, and that is their next target focus.
Mm-hmm. Very, yeah, well put. And yeah, you just brought up a good point where, you know, I think education is key. And, you know, if your defense, so to speak, as well, company ABC said I could do this, it's like, well, yeah, but is company ABC going to go to your behalf and defend yourself against the IRS? And I'm guessing the answer is no on that part.
That's correct. What's really sad is those companies that we're mentioning, right? ABC company, whatever it is, they're basing their entire, what they're teaching their clients off of a court case that was almost 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You can't base your and risk your entire retirement account off court cases that are 30 years old.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's what's really sad about this.
Okay.
Most likely the McNultys didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing exactly what they thought was allowable because that's what their custodian said, because their custodian didn't take the time to educate them.
Right.
So I tell people all the time, just get educated.
Exactly.
You know, it's free to give us a call. We, like you said earlier, we host so many webinars. We bring in CPAs and tax attorneys and tax professionals that talk about these things that you can get for 100% free.
Wow.
Just so you don't get in trouble.
Sure. Yep.
You definitely
don't want to, you know, be on the IRS's bad side. You know, just follow the rules, have a team together and grow your retirement account as best as you can.
Yep.
With all this, you know, maybe some of my listeners still have some questions and maybe they're very interested in doing a rollover IRA or transferring an IRA or whatever the case may be. If there was someone that was interested in hearing more and what Quest has to offer, what'd be the easiest way to get a hold of you, Derek?
So there's two ways. The first off is the phone number. Quest, okay. We are one of the only custodians we don't use, and not we use a non-automated line. You wow. call and someone answers.
Like an actual person, you mean?
An actual person.
Wow.
Right?
I'm sold.
So you can call us. It's 855-FUN-IRAs or 281-492-3434.
8434. Okay.
Now, the other way to get a hold of us is just email.
Okay.
You can email me at IRA Specialist. That's with an S at the end. So okay. IRA Specialist at questtrust.com. So there's two T's right there in the middle. Quest ends in a T and then trust starts with a T.
Gotcha. Questtrust.com. Perfect. Yep. And I will have the phone number and the email in the show notes for this. So if you are interested in reaching out to Derek or anyone else at Quest IRA, literally you can just click the link to call or email. So, well, with that, Derek, I want to thank you for your time. And I myself actually learned quite a bit here, even though I've self-directed my retirement account for almost 4 years. So I want to thank you again for your time and thank you for educating my listeners.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John, for having me. I look forward to working with you, man. So thanks again.
Sounds good. Thanks, Derek.
Bye, guys.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to share, rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more updates, check out www.wealthandfreedomnexus.com. Remember, nothing on this show should be considered tax, legal, investment, or professional advice. This show is produced solely for educational and informational purposes. Please consult an appropriate and licensed tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for specific advice for your situation. For distribution or publication rights or media interviews, please contact the host.